Chapter 40. Now the length of the siege and the Judean sallies made Vespasianus feel that the position was reversed, and that he himself was now the besieged. So now that the earthworks were approaching the walls, he decided to bring up the ram. Now this is an immense beam, like the mast of a ship. But it is reinforced at its extremity with a mass of iron in the form of a ram's head, from which the machine derives its name. Now, the ram is suspended at its middle by ropes, like the beam of a scale's balance, to another beam, which is supported at either end by posts fixed into the ground. Now, a multitude of men first pull the ram backward, and then all of them, pushing together with all their weight, heave it forward, so that with a mighty noise, it batters the wall with its projecting iron. And there is no tower so strong, or enclosure so broad, able to withstand the repeated assaults of this machine, even though able to sustain the initial blow. This was the experiment which the Roman general himself undertook, being impatient to carry the city by storm, since the long blockade, coupled with the Judean activity, was proving injurious. Therefore, indeed, the Romans brought forward the catapults and the rest of their artillery within range of the Judeans standing on the walls who were endeavoring to beat them off, and put these machines into action. But the archers and the slingers simultaneously advanced. While this attack prevented any of the Judeans from venturing onto the enclosures, another Roman party brought up the ram, protected by a long line of hurdles, over which was a covering of skin, both for their own security as well as that of their machine. And at the first blow, the wall was indeed shaken, but a piercing cry arose from the city's interior, as though it had already been taken. Now when I saw, under the repeated blows constantly aimed upon the same spot, that the wall was on the verge of collapsing, I devised a method of paralyzing the force of the machine for a while. So, I gave orders for sacks to be filled with chaff, and to be let down by ropes at the place where the ram was seen continually battering. The objective was both to deflect the head and to deaden the force of the blow by the soft cushion which received it. This contrivance seriously delayed the Romans. Indeed, wherever they turned their machine, the Judeans above retorted by moving their sacks and placing them opposite the blows, while the wall suffered no injury from the impact. This lasted only until the Romans invented a counter device consisting of long poles and with scythes attached to the ends, with which they cut the cords supporting the sacks. Now this was how the city destroyer recovered its efficacy. And when the wall, for it was newly fixed, was already showing signs of giving away, our party, as a last resort, had recourse to fire. Now, snatching up all the dry wood which we could find, we rushed out from three quarters of the city and set fire both to the machines and the hurdles and the stakes of the Romans' earthworks. But the Romans, both stupefied by our audacity and with the flames preventing any effort to rescue them, did little to save them. For fed by dry tinder, with the addition of bitumen and pitch, as well as sulfur, the fire immediately flew in all directions, and the works which had cost the Romans such severe labor were consumed in 1 hour. And on this occasion, a certain Judean who made his mark is worthy of an account and a remembrance. Indeed, his name was Eleazar, the boy of Shemaiah, but his fatherland was Sheba in Galilee. Now lifting an enormous rock, this man hurled it from the wall at the city destroyer with such force that he broke off the machine's head. Then, leaping down, he took up the ram's head from the midst of his foes, carrying it with perfect composure to the foot of the wall. Now, he became a target for all his enemies, and his defenseless body received their hits. Indeed, he was pierced by 5 projectiles. But ignoring these, he scaled the wall, and he stood in sight of everyone as an instance of his great bravery. So, writhing under his wounds, he fell headlong with the ram's head in his hands. After him, those who distinguished themselves the most were 2 brothers, Netiros and Philippos, who were also Galileans from the village of Ruma. Indeed, they dashed out against the soldiers of the 10th Legion, but charged the Romans with such impetuosity and force that they both broke their ranks and put to flight everyone whom they encountered. Following in the train of these men, both I and the rest of the multitude, with firebrands in our hands, sallied out once again and set fire to the machines, as well as the hurdles and earthworks belonging both to the 5th and to the 10th Legion, which had been routed. But the others immediately buried those implements and all their combustible materials. But about evening, the Romans re-erected the ram and brought it up to the spot where the wall had been weakened by its previous blows. At this moment, one of the Judean defenders hit Vespasianus with a projectile in the sole of his foot. And the wound was indeed slight, the distance having broken the missile's force. But the incident created a vast commotion among the Romans, for the sight of blood alarmed those immediately surrounding Vespasianus. And at once, it was declared through the whole army that the general was wounded. And most of the soldiers, abandoning the siege, came running toward their general in consternation and anxiety. Now the first on the spot was Titos, with great anxiety for his father, so that the multitude was greatly agitated, both by their goodwill for their commander, and by the sight of his boy's anguish. However, Vespasianos found little difficulty in allaying both the anxieties of his son and the tumult of the army. For he mastered his pain and hastened to show himself to everyone who had trembled for his life. This roused them to wage war against the Judeans more fiercely than ever. For each was willing to be the first to brave danger in order to avenge their general. And with shouts of mutual encouragement, they rushed for the walls. But our party, though falling down one upon another under the hail of missiles from the catapults and rock launchers, were still not driven from the wall. Instead, with fire and iron weapons and rocks, we continued to assail the soldiers who, under the protection of their hurdles, were propelling the ram. And indeed, our efforts had little or no effect. But we were incessantly falling, because the Romans saw us without themselves being seen. For we were both fully surrounded by the glare of our lights, and formed a conspicuous mark for our foes, exactly as though we were in broad daylight. Also, we found difficulty in avoiding the projectiles from the machines, which we were unable to see in the distance. Therefore, in this way, the missiles from both the sharpened bolt launchers and the catapults came with such force as to strike down many at once. And the whizzing stones hurled by the machines carried away the battlements and broke off the corners of the towers. For indeed, there is no body of men, however strong, which the force of the mass of these stones is unable to lay low to the last phalanx. Now some of the incidents of that night will give an idea of the power of this machine. For one of the men standing on the wall beside me had his head carried away by such a rock, and his skull was flung as from a sling to the distance of 3 stadia. Also, a pregnant woman was struck in the belly at the moment she was leaving her house at daybreak. But the infant in her womb was flung half a stadium away. So mighty was the force of these stone launchers. Therefore, more fearful than the implements was their noise, but so was the sound of the missiles. Now, there was the thud of the corpses falling, one after another from the wall. And indeed, terrifying were the shrieks raised from the women within the city, which were mingled with the moans of the murdered victims. But the entire enclosure in front of the battle line ran with blood, and the fallen bodies formed an ascent to the wall's summit. Now the echo from the mountains contributed to the fearful din. And, in a word, nothing was lacking in sound or appearance which could strike consternation. Yet indeed, multitudes of the Yodfot defenders fell in valiant fight. Multitudes were wounded. And it was not until the hour of the morning watch that the wall, after incessant battering, succumbed to the machines. But those within blocked the breach with their own bodies and their weapons, throwing up a makeshift defense before the Romans were able to lay the machines for the escalade.